This is a Roundtable Podcast Showcase episode, 20 Minutes with Nathan Lowell. Hello, everyone. I'm Dave Robison.
And I'm Brian Humphrey.
And you're listening to 20 Minutes With.
With each episode of the Roundtable Podcast, Dave and I have the opportunity to brainstorm with some remarkable people, and we figured, hey, as long as we have them here, let's duct tape them to a chair and make them tell us their secrets. Wait, is that right?
No, sorry. I didn't get you the new script. My bad. But yeah, that's basically what we intend to do. And honestly, Brian, I'm really looking forward to this week's guest. Author, professor, serviceman, and distinguished gentleman. Really, it's not every day that we get to speak to a modern Renaissance man. So let's get into it. Ladies and gents, we are proud to give you 20 Minutes with Nathan Lowell. Nathan, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this evening.
It's my pleasure. I'm looking around to see who you're talking about, but I'm the only other one on the line at the moment, so I guess that's me. Hi.
Well, you know, honestly, in reading your bio and looking at your curriculum vitae of literary efforts and professional efforts, honestly, you really kind of span the gamut from academic to artistic to military service.
It's quite impressive.
I don't know about that. It's we do what we do, right? And life is what happens while we're busy planning something else. And I was really busy planning, and so I've had a lot of time to do other things.
I wanted to ask you, one of the things that struck me as I read your blog and explored some of your work, both in the vocal field and in the literary field, that it seems like you have an adventurer's spirit when it comes to your writing. Like, you're seeking out challenges to push your writing to into new areas that perhaps you're not comfortable with, but hope to be. And I was curious, is that just curiosity and exploration, or is that you actively honing your skills as a writer?
I look at it more like I want to tell a story that's mine. And so I have to find places where those stories don't happen yet. And so that means I have to tell stories that are odd or offbeat or different. So the idea really isn't so much the notion of deliberately honing craft, as it were, as much as it's trying to find a story that fits me, that fits the idea that I have that I want to tell, that fits the story that I don't really know what it is until I actually get it on the page.
And how is that search going?
One word at a time.
Excellent.
Yeah. One of the things that I know that writers deal with a lot has to do with the process. And everybody always wants to know, what is your process? What process do you go through? And you're somebody who your name is actually being used as a unit of measurement now in the amount of words created.
Yeah, 10,000 words a day.
That's right, yeah, in a sitting. And so I was wondering if you would be willing to just sort of describe your process. In our past conversations, you termed the phrase binge pantser. Could you go into more detail?
Yeah, I'm a binge pantser. I'm really a bad example to stand up in front of a creative writing class, because I violate pretty much every rule. I don't write every day. I don't write unless I've really got something that I want to write. And then when I do, I tend not to do anything else until it's done. And I have no idea. Typically, I have no idea when I sit down what's going to be when I get there. I might have a rough idea. The main series that I wrote, the Cher books, The Golden Age of the Solar Clipper, The Trader's Tales, was really an idea to see if I could write a novel. I'd written a dissertation, and I wanted to see if I could write fiction. So I had this idea that I wanted to see if I could do it, and the base notion was, I read a lot of current science fiction, and it seems to me particularly particularly in space opera, that you have to blow something up about every 15 pages, and you have to save the universe every 50. And I thought, you know, there have to be other kinds of stories that we can tell about people being in outer space. So what if we sent freighters instead of frigates? And what if the universe was settled by an airline instead of an air force? What if the planets were, for lack of a better term, company towns? And what would that look like, where profits really was the only driving force? How would that universe be shaped? What would we be doing? How would we be reacting to each other? What would somebody do? And so I came up with this idea of clippers in outer space. And in order to introduce it to myself as much as anybody else, I used a pretty tried and true technique of the outsider, somebody who's not from that world, who has to discover it as he grows up. And so the character of Ishmael Horatio Huang became my viewport into this world of not Star Wars, not Star Trek, not interstellar war, but interstellar trade. And how do we make that work? And what does it look like from the mess deck? Because I wanted to write a story. Star Trek fans from way back will remember the red-shirted crewman. And I always wondered, what did that guy do before he got tapped for the away team? And his ensuing death. And who filled his job afterwards? Because it's not like they could get down to the local recruiting station and bring somebody on board to fill that slot. So how did that work exactly? What did he do? And are those kinds of stories compelling? Can I tell a story that engages somebody without blowing everything up?
So that actually raises an interesting question. So first of all, let me just clarify. The share books, the Solar Clipper books, there are four books in that series?
Six
books in that series. And this began as a lark. Basically.
Oh yeah. This absolutely began as a lark. It was I wanted to see if I could do it. It was done somewhat in secret. I wanted to surprise my wife with it to see, because she's long suffered with my trying to be a writer, wanting to be a writer, and so I did it. But it was actually a technological innovation that permitted me to go back to writing, and that was podcasting. I was listening to a lot of podcasts. I started listening right after Adam Curry started podcasting in 2004, and I was looking at the technology as a teaching technique for reaching students in rural areas where high-speed dial-up wasn't available, as a way to deliver to them some multimedia content that wasn't dependent on broadband or streaming to reach them. And podcasting is the ideal method to do it, except that in those days nobody knew what podcasting was. Most teachers still don't know what podcasting is. And as an educational tool, we haven't even really begun to think about using it yet. But that technology also, and as I was partaking of listening and checking out to see what other people were doing, I discovered this thing called a podiobook, which is serialized audio fiction. So think audiobook, but once a week. So you get a new episode every week of your story. And I was listening to stories that were fascinating. They were wonderful. They were charming. Some of them were terrible. but they were all authentic. They were all voices that you wouldn't otherwise be able to hear, because in many cases they were the voices of the authors themselves. So it was a fascinating world. And one of the things that struck me was they were having a lot of fun. And I thought, fun is good. I like fun. Fun we can do. And so I thought it would be fun to see if I could, A, write the book, B, record the book, C, get the book published in time for our wedding anniversary in 2007.
Success?
I was late by 2 days.
Oh wow. That's
so
okay.
I sat down to start to write the book on January 12th in 2007, and the first episode released on February 17th.
Holy smokes. Of the same year.
Yeah.
One month later.
4 weeks later, 5 weeks later, yeah.
Wow. Okay, yep. Yeah, you may not be the ideal standard to to hold our nation's aspiring writers to. That's astonishing.
I wrote 4 novels that year and had them all podcasted by the end of the year.
Wow.
Yes. I did one for NaNoWriMo. The last one was a spin-off novel. I did the first 3 shares, quarter share, half share, full share. Oh, and the shares, by the way, correspond to a pay grade.
Right.
So each step up is his new pay grade and the new trials and tribulations that he faces in some new responsibility area aboard the ship.
Okay.
So the lowest you can be is quarter share. So you get a quarter of the share of the profits of the voyage.
So at what point in as you sit down and on a lark start scribbling furiously at quarter share?
Yeah.
At what point did you feel the weight of a book settle upon you, and what were the signs that you realized, okay, this is more than just a lark now. This is officially a project that I am committing to.
Oh, it hasn't happened yet. you have to understand the first draft was 76,000 words, and it was done in 10 days. And the second draft was 3 days later. The third draft was 2 days after that, and then I started recording. I had a beta reader who was reading it as I went along, but my target was novel length, which was 80,000 words, 80 to 100,000. So there's a lot of people who will tell you that the middle is the worst, and it is, because you get to the middle and you go, what the? Where am I going to go? How is this going to... I suppose for people who outline, for people who have a plan, that it might actually work out okay. But for me, I sat down to write, and I'll be brutally honest. The only thing I had was somebody else's first line, and that was it.
Call me
and
Ishmael.
And this idea, call me Ishmael. And this idea that what I wanted to do was to take this famous line, call me Ishmael, and to take this character whose name is a conglomeration of famous authors imposed upon him by a cruel world, and to tell the story of him working up through the pay grades. So I knew he had to be a quarter share, and I had to get introduced to the world, and I had to find somewhere in there something that would be sufficient for a plot arc to get this into a story as opposed to just a character vignette. Now, if you look at my reviews on Amazon, there are a lot of people who think I didn't quite manage to find a plot. But I think it's there. It works for me. It doesn't work for everybody, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be. But when I got to the end, it was very curious, and it's happened, I think, in all 8 of my novels. I write the last line thinking I've got another few chapters to go, and then I realize that I've written the last line.
How do you know that?
I don't until I get I'm typing to beat hell, and I'm just writing as fast as I can write. I'm watching the movie that's playing in the back of my eyes and trying to get the transcription down before it all goes away, and then I write the last line, and there isn't anything else. It doesn't go anywhere. After that, it's like, oh, yeah,
movie's
roll
over.
Credits. Yeah, roll the credits, because that's the end. And a couple of times I've written it, and I've thought, that can't be right. And I've had to run it past a couple beta readers and say, is that really the end in this? A couple of times they said, well, yeah, but if you end it there, they'll kill you. They being the listeners, the sure. audience.
Sure. And unless you have the sequel coming out very soon.
Very soon, very soon. Yeah, well, the first 4 books all came out in a year, and then the last 4 books, the last, let's see, to get the chronology straight, the first year, 2007, Quarter Share, Half Share, Full Share, and South Coast, which is a spin-off series called The Shaman Tales, The Golden Age of the Solar Clipper. And that's a spin-off from Half Share, because there's an artifact in Half Share that everybody was just like gaga over. And so I had to go back and start to explore that a little bit to see if I could come up with some backstory. And since it was NaNoWriMo, and I was going to do a book for NaNoWriMo as kind of a I'm pooped for the year, but I'm going to try to see if I can do one more just for fun. And so I wanted to tell this backstory of this one character who joins the ship in Half Share. And I went back too far and started telling about her father and laying the groundwork for what would become the Son of the Shaman is the Shaman, which is what launched this woman into outer space. So I got to the end of the month and realized I had a perfectly good story about this guy, and 80,000, actually it was like 88,000, 89,000 words at the end of the month. And so I said, well, okay, we'll have to have another sequel. And so I started another series.
So you accidentally wrote a book.
I accidentally wrote a book. Well,
got it.
No, I wasn't accidentally wrote a book. I accidentally started another series.
There you go.
That was kind of tragic.
Well, I hear a lot of young authors saying, I have a story idea, and it's going to be a trilogy. And I can only assume that they don't understand the scope of a story that spans multiple arcs. Now, clearly you went into this very open-hearted and open-minded, and it evolves gracefully for you. In looking back...
Gracefully is an amusing word, yes.
Well, with the perspective of time and distance.
Yes, okay.
You can use that term discreetly. Would you have any advice for those who are just starting on that path, who are looking and saying, I'm going to do a trilogy? What do you recommend to them to prepare themselves for the journey?
Work out.
Physically?
It's physically. It's brutal. It's grinding. Find a desk where you can stand up and work. I just did one for me, and it's made a big difference. I need to use it more. I think part of the thing is there is the sweep. I've run into a couple of people who've written multiple hundreds of thousands of words, and somewhere in there is a story. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges is for new writers in particular. I'm always leery of, it's a trilogy. Really? Okay. Is it a trilogy because you know you can't market 400,000 words in a single volume and you're going to cut it up into three pieces? Or is it really three cyclical stories that you're going to tell in sequence? How does that work out? And I think a lot of people, when they sit down and say, oh, well, it's a big book. It's going to be a wide, sweeping story on a broad canvas. Well, that's a lot of detail. That's a lot of stuff. And for me, I sat down to write a book, and I wrote six, and I wound up with a six-volume set. I sat down to write Ravenwood, which I thought was going to be a single volume, and it's turned into a trilogy on me. I don't even, it's like, no, one book. But it outgrew it. The story that I thought I was going to tell, I wound up telling a different story. But I think that's part of being a pantser. That's part of being someone who doesn't plan out what I'm going to write. It's sloppiness on my part more than anything, because I don't know what I'm writing when I write it. So this idea that you're going to sit down and write a trilogy is like, well, really? Do you really know that what you're going to write? Are you that well plotted out? I mean, Michael Sullivan, who, bless his gizzard, he actually plotted out his six volumes. He outlined six volumes before he wrote the first one.
Right.
He knew what he was going to write. Well, I couldn't write like that. I'd lose interest about page seven.
If you know what's coming.
If I know what's coming, what's the sense, you know?
Right. Two questions to kind of follow up on that. The first one being, when Dave posed the question, I think one of the telling words is he said new writers often say this. And I know, you know, as a teacher, I see students all the time, oh, I want to do this big, huge, amazing, very overwhelming thing. And then they get three sentences into it and give up. So would you, with new writers, would you just recommend start small and build onto that? And then the other thing that I wanted to ask you about that you brought up was in sort of this discovery writing, you know, you say that you get going into something and it kind of takes over. And do you think that that's something that helps keep things fresh and keep things from being too plotted? Do you think it's possible to have something that is too plotted out, too specifically outlined?
Oh, yeah, yeah. First question answered first. Yeah, somebody who wants to write something big, my advice is have at it.
Yeah.
Go for it. Go for it. Sit down, start writing, and realize that you're talking at least 350,000 words. You're probably talking 500,000 words before you stand up. Mm-hmm. Now, for new writers, that's not young writers, but new writers. For young writers, it's a slightly different issue, because for young writers, they can't imagine that they can write 100,000 words. My daughters, when they found out that each of my books is 80,000 to 100,000 words or more, they were like, "What? are there many words?" And it's like, no, multiple times. You know, I probably only used about 6,000 or 7,000 altogether, but I reused them in different ways. So part of it is, do you really understand what a trilogy means? And a trilogy means, roughly speaking, 400,000 words. 400,000 words is a lot of words for somebody who hasn't ever written 25,000 in a row. Now, you can't really say that to somebody who has this vision. And so I fall back on the wisdom of the ages, and something that my father used to say, whenever you want to win a fight, tell them they're right. Because either you'll look really smart, because they are, or they'll suddenly realize the error of their ways. And either way, you can't tell them no.
Yeah. Right.
So for a new writer who thinks they want to write a trilogy, my advice is go for it. Sit down. Button chair, finger on keys.
Yeah.
Whittle till done. And plan on it being a while. For me, I spent years at a keyboard as a programmer. So for me, sitting at a keyboard for hours a day is really nothing terribly new.
Wait, you're a geek too?
Oh, yeah.
I
built my first computer as a junior high school science fair project in the sixth grade.
Oh, jeez.
I only won second prize because the math and science teachers, who were the judges, couldn't really see the value of a math system that only had one and zero. You could only count up to one. And they just couldn't see the value in something that was either on or off. So the whole idea of a binary adder was kind of lost on them. So.
And my, how times have changed.
I am dating myself, my wife.
Well, make sure you bring yourself flowers and candy. I hear that works out well when you date yourself.
Yeah. So. Anyway, and the second question, what was the second question?
Dealing with discovery in writing.
Oh, dealing with discovery. Mm-hmm. There's a widely reported phenomenon that characters frequently take over the story and run with it, and I find that to be true. If you've created a believable character and you've put them in a believable setting, they will respond believably, whether you want them to or not. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. I remember one particular scene where I sat down to write a particular part of the story, expecting fully well that we were going to go here. And I got to the end of the chapter, and we weren't there. And not only weren't we there, we weren't even going there. That wasn't going to happen. That just did not compute. Was not going to be. So I think keeping it fresh. I've used this metaphor more than once of watching the movie behind my eyes and trying to transcribe fast enough to keep up with the motion on the screen. And that's really how I write. That's really how it goes. That's really how I've had a couple of 25,000 word days, because the reels just kept on coming and I just kept on writing and I managed to keep up. If I lose the thread, trying to recover it later is a pain. It's sometimes not even possible.
So don't interrupt Nathan when he's writing.
Yeah, that's right.
So just, and one last question, in terms of that cinema that plays behind your eyes, have you ever discovered, as you're moving through this story, that you speak of the authenticity of the characters and how they take on a life of their own. Have you found that characters have died on you in that respect, that the organic nature of them living has stopped producing, and have you had to go back and rework that?
I've occasionally been gored by a rampaging Plotosaurus. I've fallen into bottomless plot holes on occasion. You're writing full out as fast as you can go, and I'm talking 1,500 words an hour, hour after hour. And you get to the end, and you suddenly realize, this doesn't work at all. This just doesn't work. And you have to back up. The first time I did it, it was like, oh my God, I'm going to waste these words. And the answer is, no, not really. They're not. Maybe they'll be part of another story somewhere else. But they're not part of this story. So the fact that they're there at all is really irrelevant, and back up. And so you throw away, and Merle Lafferty cringes every time I say this, you throw away a novella's worth of work.
Oh, God.
And start over where the last time you had live wood. And you graft onto that, and you say, oh, yes, this is where the story is supposed to go. This, see? You knew you should have taken the ride at Albuquerque.
So I have to jump in because I have to ask you, do you actually physically delete the work? Because I have a tendency to grab it, throw it in a file that I don't look at for five more years. Do you just get rid of it?
Quite frequently, I will just I'll just delete it.
Oh, that hurts.
That's very liberating, though.
I just had
a friend who lost his notebook that he'd been scribbling in for a year. And as crushing as that must be, I told him, dude, you're free. You're liberated. Let that go, man.
No, there are times when I won't. Like NaNoWriMo, I don't delete words. Not until December. But the idea of the words is really one of those curious things that I know what the themes are. I know what the ideas are. I wrote it once. I can write it again if I have to. And at 1,500 words an hour, that's not going to be very long. So it isn't even a question of the time. So it's really the notion that, okay, those words were practice. That was a plot line that doesn't have any fruit on it. We can safely discard that. And maybe I learned something about the character that will then inform something that happens later. Nobody ever needs to know that I learned about it in a dead-end plot line. and maybe my understanding in writing that will tell me something about the characters, even subconsciously, that will let me spin the tale better, more fruitfully as it goes along.
So there is no wasted effort.
No, not really. I think the writing itself is the effort. It's the exercise. It's the I hate to use this metaphor, but it's the building of the muscle. It's the writing itself that is the point. It's not the words you produce.
And on that note, I'm going to bring this 20 minutes to a close. Nathan, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and your perspectives on things. I think the organic philosophy that you approach your work with is incredibly valuable, and hopefully many of our listeners will be able to glean some gold from that.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Brian, anything else before we sign off?
No, I think there's a wealth of things that we can still cover, but tonight's not the night, so hopefully we'll have at least another session, if not a few.
That's right. Leave them wanting more, even the hosts.
Absolutely.
All right, folks. Thanks so much for tuning in. Stay tuned next week. We'll have another opportunity to glean wisdom and gold from another esteemed guest host. Until then, take care, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LeBroyer, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com. Or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is at writerspodcast. Or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.